If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Uh-oh.
Up ahead, look out. Hello, Amari Stoudemire elevates and detonates.
Well, welcome into the show, Planeteers. It's a strange time when I come on for a show and we go 2-1 in a week, and I'm like, oh, could have been better. But we discussed this week coming into it. We knew we were facing three of the worst teams in the league. I think that's fair to say, yeah. And the Sacramento Kings, the Chicago Bulls, and the New Orleans Pelicans. We had a little bit of trouble out there, even in our two wins, primarily against the Pelicans last night. There was a big comeback attempt. But, hey, 2-1, you know, I think we talked a little bit about this with regards to Jalen Green and kind of reintegrating him into the team's offense and game plans. And this was this week and the next week are the weeks to do it, where you're going up against teams that are generally considered to be softer. We'll talk a little bit about how the rookies are getting a little bit more play. And that tells me kind of just the same, that you're not going to burn out your starters trying to capture a win. You want the win, but you're not going to burn out your top players trying to get if you can try and develop some other guys and get the win at the same time. So, coming to you live from Boston, breaking it all down for us, and Jaylen Brown's biggest fan, Bruce, how you doing?
I'm doing great, and yesterday was actually a wonderful day. Like you mentioned, I'm from Boston, so I got to see Jason Tatum come back for the Celtics. He looked fantastic.
Robin to Jaylen Brown's
I don't know about that. I think they're Superman together, but seeing that was pretty awesome. Obviously just him coming back, it was just cool to see, but obviously he had a great game, almost had a triple double, which, I mean, I don't know if anybody has him in our fantasy league. That might be a side note, but whoever does have him in our fantasy league is very lucky. Or if someone
Suns
doesn't,
worldwide.
I might have to
remember. Oh, he drafted Suns him. World... He goes, it's all part of the plan. Then he went on to lose every single week.
Yeah, exactly. So, all part of the plan, I guess, but, it was nice to see that. And then also the Suns got their revenge last night, right? After disappointingly losing in the first half of the back-to-back. I unfortunately had two friends from college that were at that game. One of them liked Colin Sexton, so he wasn't too mad about the outcome. But they were definitely questioning and concerning this Suns team going into the second game of the back-to-back. I told them kind of relax, and yeah, the Suns took care of business in the second game, which was really nice to see. So yesterday, not only did I get to see the Celtics win with Jason Tatum coming back, but I also got to see a really good Devin Booker game as well, which definitely, I think, made my Friday night worth watching basketball-wise, which was fun.
Yeah, and it was, I will say too, it was not the easiest week to watch games. No. I think was it, yeah, Sacramento was NBC.
Yeah, and it was 11 p.m., so right. It was very late over here on the
East Coast. So that was brutal, so I was not able to watch that one. I was not able to watch the Chicago Bulls game because it's considered part of the blackout market, because I'm in the Pacers-Bulls-Timberwolves market, which you would think, okay, that's fine. But WGN, at least for me, used to be a thing as a kid, and they would show you, like, the Chicago Bulls games. And you could get the Chicago broadcasts. I think you should not be able to block out somebody from a different state if you do not have the actual local programming in your market. Like, I would understand if it was like, oh, yeah, well, you have to just watch the local broadcast on WGN. No, there is none. There's no Minnesota broadcast. There's no Chicago broadcast of these games. No Indiana Pacers broadcast. At least not one that I can find. So it was tough. It was just basically the Pelicans game that I was able to check out. And I'll be honest, the new Resident Evil game is out, so it was difficult to focus, all my attention, because when you're a husband and a father, you know, you got to take those opportunities when you can. So
I don't blame you.
No, it becomes difficult, and because it's also not one of those games where you can just play it in front of your toddler.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah,
probably not. Yeah, you don't want to throw that one on too early. Or really probably any part of the game, just the safe rooms. I see in the chat, King Nash wants to know where Kevin's at. A good question. He might be joining us. I have to remind myself sometimes, let's see, the time zone difference. Let's see, what time is
midnight over there?
I know he's used to it. But yeah, it's past midnight there. And he just got in from a drive. And he told us about 20 minutes ago, showing us a picture of his bike, that he was almost home. And so I don't know if that means he's going to be hopping on soon, or if that might mean he's been exhausted from riding a motorcycle through the Philippines, and it's past midnight, and he might just be strung out from the road. So I certainly know that vibe as well. That's kind of what the Suns are facing a little bit right now in terms of being just a little bit strung out. We've got injury concerns. We've got guys getting pulled over for driving under the influence. We got things to talk about, Planeteers, don't you worry. But let's first start off with the Kings game, which is kind of exactly what this team needed to start off after a bit of a choppy couple weeks from the All-Star game. The Suns end up winning 114-103. It was, I don't think, really ever in doubt. The Kings were actually giving as good as they gave in the first half. They had the lead going into halftime. That was the concern. But I don't know. I just I had a vibe that this was going to be totally okay. We talked a little bit about it. Let me run down the coaches' decisions and injuries for the Kings. Some of the key players that you may have heard of that were not playing: DeAndre Hunter was out. Domantas Sabonis was out. Doug McDermott was out. I just remember him. I know he's not a big player anymore. Zach LaVine, Keegan Murray was out. Let's see. And so here's who was playing of names that you might know. Russell Westbrook, hey, MVP. DeMar DeRozan. And let's see, Precious Achiuwa was playing. Malik Monk was playing. And so they did have some of their main guys still there. But the Suns, like I said, took care of business. Jalen Green, this is a good game for him. He kind of needed this. It wasn't his best game, shooting-wise, by any stretch. But he did get 20 points leading the team and scoring on 7 of 16 shooting. His three-point shot still kind of evading him, and 7 turnovers. So, I don't know. You know, seeing the ball go in the basket is what he needs right now. But, there's a lot of things that he still needs to clean up. And, again, I guess this is the time to go through those growing pains. Colin Gillespie chipped in 17-9. Devin Booker also had 17 points as well. And this would be Mark Williams' only game this week And just over 22 minutes, he had 10 points, 9 rebounds. Bruce, what do you think of the game? I mean, like I said, we fell behind early. It was something that would obviously plague us later on in the week. Otherwise, took care of business against the Kings.
Yeah, they out-rebounded the Kings, which was something that was very solid. Obviously, the Kings with no Sabonis and no Dylan Cardwell, who has been a really solid piece for them. He was a two-way guy that emerged within their roster because they were bad with no Sabonis. So they only have Maxime Reyneau and Precious Achiuwa and former Phoenix Sun legend Drew Eubanks, who got 3 minutes. But yeah, their front court... their front court's a little bit weak, so that was good for the Suns to dominate on the boards. And well, we'll be talking about him when we get to the Pelicans game. But Oso Godaro for the Suns, I mean, 14 points, 14 rebounds, just absolutely insane for this team. Rashear Fleming played really well as well. He had 8 and 6, looked like he could consistently get rotational minutes, which for one of our viewers, Michael P, I know has been a big talking point and discussion for him to play the rookies more. And we'll definitely be giving Michael P his round of applause, because Jordan Ott may be listening to this podcast and be listening to Michael P's thoughts, because he's been doing it and it's been working for this Suns team. But yeah, Jalen Green.
I'm going to run with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jordan Ott wakes up early on Saturday morning, pours himself a hot cup of coffee, and sitting at home in the desert, just like, you know what? It's kind of hot for a late winter day. And then he goes, you know what? I'm going to tune in to the Suns podcast. I'm going to see what the people are saying. See what the Planeteers are up to. And tune in and be like, you know what? Let's see if we can integrate some of this information. And you know, it's a low-risk, high-reward kind of show.
Exactly. They got 4 viewers, right? I can just be lurking in there. They'll have no idea I'm here, and then I can just take all their stuff and use it to my advantage. But yeah,
exactly.
I
mean, nobody's gonna believe them otherwise. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
you took that from Suns Planet. Who's Suns Planet? Kevin from the Philippines.
Did you know that Daquan Plowden also played against the Suns in this game? Daquan Plowden, infamously known for being a throw in that massive Kevin Durant deal. He was not actually coming from the Rockets, but was like from the Hawks and like the David Roddy Clint Capella like movement that happened over there. And yeah, he's on the Kings now. Like, the Suns waived him. They did not keep him because they didn't trade for him. And he was on the Kings in this game. So little revenge for Plowden. Only had 2 points and there were free throws. But in 21 minutes. But yeah, the Kings, like you mentioned, Jake, this game, it was 21 expected. Minutes,
he had 2 points on 0 of 3 shooting, 4 rebounds. Yeah. You know, I'm glad he didn't show up in the Valley. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's just the Kings. I mean, from the first game of the season when they played them, I was like, this is going to be kind of a close matchup because I kind of figured both teams would be kind of meh. Well, I was completely wrong on that. The Suns exceeded my expectations and the Kings worsened my expectations by a landslide. And when you kind of go into these games, especially at 11 o'clock on the East Coast here, you kind of are just praying that they win. So you at least you're not wasting your time staying up that late. And I'm glad that they were able to do that. I mean, like I mentioned, Oso played good. Rookies played good. Even Grayson Allen had 18 points. And I want to give a shout out to my guy, Hayden Silly from Clutch Points, who works for the Phoenix Suns and is a media member. He was talking to Jordan Ott about Grayson Allen because let me pull up the stats so I don't misinterpret it, but I believe he said Grayson Allen has 28 assists. Yeah, 28 assists over the last 4 games, which is, I think, a big improvement as well for Grayson Allen this season. With Jordan Goodwin being out and with Jalen Green and Devin Booker dealing with injuries, he has had a lot of opportunities of being a ball handler for this Suns team. And in the past, that's kind of been something that people don't really like with him because he can cause a lot of turnovers and he doesn't have the best ball handler control. But this season, he's rapidly improved on that, especially with his driving game. And I think that that's been a really key thing for Grayson Allen to add to not just his 3-point shot, which I know I just kind of viewed him as for this Phoenix Suns team. And I think many, many others as well did as his addition for this squad.
Yeah, I feel like he always had it, and we certainly saw moments of it in the past as well. One of the differences, I think, with this team is that they've definitely, you know, the Ott system compared to, you know, Vogel, compared to he who shall remain nameless. Why am I blanking on last year's coach?
Bud.
Bud, thank you. Yeah, Coach Bud.
Mr. Bud Weiser instead of Budenholzer.
That's right. Yeah, Mr. Play Random. No, I mean, like, it feels very much, and we're kind of seeing this a little bit with Kevin Durant in Houston, so I don't know if it's necessarily the coaching or just kind of who's on the court, but I feel like players like a Grayson Allen, to Royce O'Neal to an extent, the role players, maybe out of necessity in Phoenix this year, have had to unleash more of their games, whereas previously it was like, Grayson, you are here to do three ND work. You are not to put the ball on the floor. And every now and then we'd see him like hard charge into the paint on a power drive from a three-point range. I'm like, he's got that ability. Why do we not get to see that more often? And we have, and he's actually keeping his head up and finding guys to dish to. So, you know, we talked a little bit about it around the trade deadline, and I think we were in agreement. We're happy that we kept Grayson Allen and Royce O'Neal. I just don't think, you know, nobody was going to value them the way we kind of value them. So I think the idea of like, oh, you know, trade them for picks, trade them for other players. Yeah, that in theory, that sounds nice. But if nobody's offering you anything that's going to be an improvement, they're probably, okay, well, you know, for those higher contracts, we'll throw you a couple seconds. That wouldn't be worth anything. I'd rather take the wins, take the potential higher ceiling with these guys on the team than kind of shortchange ourselves. And I think we've been, you know, enjoying it. You know, when Grayson's playing, Grayson's missed some games this year. But when Grayson's playing, I feel a little bit better with where this team's at. I saw there was already some talk about Mark Williams. You know, he's going to be out for 2 to 3 weeks with his foot injury. I think they said it was a stress reaction.
Yes. So it's not a stress fracture, which I think a lot of people thought was the initial report. Like they read the report and thought he already messed up his foot, which it's not. It's a stress reaction. So basically, I think like there it came up recently too. A lot of people were saying like, oh, he's playing less minutes. Oh, he's been not as aggressive as much. Maybe there's something lingering. Like Jordan Ott came out and said like, no, it just came out of nowhere. I saw a couple tweets, so I'm just going to make sure that I get this correct before I say anything. Yeah. So Kellen Olson said that it is on his left foot, which he did miss some time in 2024 due to a strained tendon. And then I'm just going to try to figure out if I can get any more on it as well. Yeah, 2 to 3 weeks with a stress reaction in the metatarsal of his left foot. He will be reevaluated in 2 to 3 weeks.
Well, this is interesting, too, is like the power of, you know, AI fast. What is a stress reaction? A stress reaction in the foot is a precursor to a stress fracture. Mm-hmm. So that explains that, you know, that it's not as bad as it could be yet. So better to rest him to kind of go back the other way and not worsen things. But here's something that kind of makes me feel better. Often considered a deep bone bruise. It indicates weakened and inflamed bone requiring 2 to 8 weeks of rest and proper rehabilitation to prevent progression to a full crack in the bone. So, yeah, he's got localized pain, swelling, and tenderness. That definitely sounds like an AI take on that. it sounds a little bit like, he's obviously dealing with some pain, and so much pain that it actually, if he continued to play through it, could actually crack the bone and he'd be out for even longer. So let's ice that baby. Let's stretch that thing out. Let's get him some rest because he's been, although less impactful of late, he's been having a great season. You talked about it, Bruce, and you're tired of discussing, are you tired of discussing the Suns rotation, or are you tired of Suns fans being down on the Suns rotation?
Kind of both, because I feel like they kind of go hand in hand, right? Like every game that, and I feel like this is kind of unfair because it happens with every fan base, but just because I cover the Suns fan base, I see it a lot more. And one thing that I've noticed on social media with the Suns fan base is that they react to everything negative and never react to anything positive. And that's one of the things that really grinds my gears. Especially,
or if it's all positive, then it's all in caps.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Unless it's all in caps, yes.
Brotherhood. Yeah.
But it annoys me because I feel like some of these people watch these games and they don't understand what's going on. And I wrote an article for Brightside, which I appreciate you trying to work into here, because that's what the main discussion was about, was the Suns center room is tiresome. And it's just really annoying to have these discussions about like, oh, Mark Williams isn't dominating. He's not getting his touches. He's not valuable. We shouldn't re-sign him. We should let him walk. When what other center in free agency or out there in the trade market is available that the Suns can get that they can impact that's going to be a top 10 center? There's not. Mm-hmm. There's no one out there that the Suns can get that's going to magically become that unless they trade a Jalen Green. Or Grayson Allen,
Philippines, I think. Just
really yeah, he's out. Yeah, exactly. They're not going to be
Kevin in right now. On the
maybe Kevin saw him on his bike. Yeah. But there's no solution there, right? And like Oso's been good, and I know I tweeted a thing about Oso, like he was playing really good yesterday in the first half, and he was, and then like right after I made that tweet, he made like a bonehead pass to Royce to Grayson Allen or Colin Gillespie instead of Royce O'Neal, and I was just like, God damn it! But it's like those little mistakes can happen just because he is a sophomore and a second round pick, but he has grown so much defensively. And then yesterday, because now Mark Williams is out right for these 2 to 3 weeks, we're going to see Kaman Malawach play, and the amount of people that I've seen tweet about this guy being a bust and yelling about him, and we've talked about it before in our own private chats. It is just hilarious about the amount of tweets. I quote tweeted one yesterday from someone on Twitter. I'm not even going to give them the honor of saying their Twitter name because they actively have been hating on Malawach since he's been drafted, taking videos of him in the late game minutes of the Chicago Bulls game, calling him a bust because he can't get a rebound in a late game situation when the man hasn't even played big minutes. Well, yesterday he got 5 blocks in a game, and that is the highest of a rookie this season. So for the people clamoring to, oh, we should have drafted Derek Queen because we needed a power forward to score, or we needed Cedric Coward, he's been looking so good. That's just because those teams have been bad enough for their teams to actually play their rookies. And I'm telling you that if Malawach was on either of those clubs, he would be getting those minutes that those guys are getting. And he might even be in those discussions of some of those players. And you would be having the reverse conversation. Why didn't we draft Malawach? Why did we draft Derek Queen? They're just so bad. It's just the same thing over and over again. And it's just annoying to me to have this conversation. So what I say is for the Suns to just keep Mark Williams, bring him back on a team-friendly contract, and just be patient. The Suns are in the first year of this rebuild. I know that you know this, but like the Celtics went to the finals in 2022. They lost. They went to the Eastern Conference Finals in 2023 and lost to the Heat. And then they made it to the finals in 2024 and won. But before that,
Jaylen Brown pulled them through. I saw that.
Mm-hmm. But those 3 years, it took multiple years of grinding, multiple different teams of rosters and trades to finally get to that core contending team. You look at the Thunder from 2 years ago. They had that really great start in 2024. Everyone thought they were going to play the Celtics in the finals. What happens? They lose to the Mavericks because they expose them on defense. What do? They go out and invest in defense. They go and get Hartenstein. They go and get Caruso. They win the championship. For the Suns, this year isn't a year where they're going to win a championship. It is a year where they're going to go to the playoffs, test and see what works, bring back the valuable guys that do, and then try to add in other areas of need, whether it's trade or free agency, to make their team better. And then in 2 to 3 years, then we can have these conversations if, you know, they're making the playoffs and they're not succeeding. Well, they need to make more different changes and make a big splash. But at this point, I don't think there's any need to do so, and no need to ruffle any feathers within the Suns organization. And I think it's wild that people say that. And then my last point about Mark Williams, because I saw Espo's tweet about it because he talked to a sports medicine professional, and it's exactly what the AI bot basically said. It is that he's essentially dealing with too much load being put on the middle long bone in his foot, and it can't handle the force. It's not broken, but a high load on it can eventually lead to a stress fracture. So basically, the man's played, 56 out of the 61 games this season. He's only played previously 44 of a career high. I think it's just him adjusting, his body adjusting to the game and the high speed of the Suns, but also like the durability that of this season he's actually playing in March, where he's usually not. And that's just going to come with time. Once again, as a person who's in their first year with a team, it's just not going to automatically click overnight. So yeah, I'm willing to be patient.
Mm-hmm. No, I was going to ask you and Kevin this. I'll just ask it to you, and we can ask Kevin another time. But because I feel like the answer might change a little bit as we go. You mentioned this team's not going to win a championship this year.
Yeah,
and I would largely, I'll put it this way. I'm not saying, oh, well, I don't know. I mean, we've got a chance. It's puncher's chance kind of deal. Somebody, Shea gets injured in the playoffs, and we take on the Thunder at that point. It's going to be a little bit more like that. But this team kind of reminds me a little bit of, and this was a little before your time, the late 90s, early 2000s Suns, where this is the pre-7 seconds or less Suns. This is like Jason Kidd, Clifford Robinson. I don't want to say backcourt 2000 too much because the whole idea of getting Jason Kidd and Penny Hardaway together sounded amazing. obviously never panned out because of injuries. But there was a long stretch from the Barkley Suns era into the 2000s. I think it was like 11 or 13 years in a row that the Suns made the playoffs. And, after the loss in the finals, they remained competitive, but, most of the time it was first and second round exits. But they just kept being in the playoffs. And so it was not that it wasn't like where the Bulls have been, for the last handful of years, which is like just barely getting into the play-in tournament and then getting smoked right away. Like they would go the second round quite a lot, but they just weren't able to get much further than that. I feel like that's kind of the level that this team has revealed so far at this point in the season, is that it's going to be good. It's going to be competitive. It will need breaks to happen and go our way. There's certain things that can obviously shift in the course of a season. I mean, look at how Oso has gone from where he was at the beginning of the year. Dude looks ripped and huge. And the Suns fans want him gone. How dare you? Late second round pick that came out of nowhere to contributing to this team. I mean, granted, he's not the guy that I recommended we draft, who I think, I don't know if he's even in, I think he's in the G League. I'd have to go back and look. The North Carolina Tar Heel center that took him to the national championship. I forget his name.
Armando Bacot, that guy?
Yeah, oh, my gosh. Yes. Okay. Thank you for reminding me of his name.
I don't know I don't even know if he's in the G League.
Bacot. Yeah. No, I was a big fan, man. I was like, that's the guy. For a second round pick, I was like, that's who the Suns should go get. And then they got Oso Iguodala. I'm like, who is that? Bacot took his team to the finals, national title game. Just to kind of tie the ribbon on the bow on this point, it's just this team's good. It's not great. But I would rather watch good basketball than it's tough right now for about 15 teams in this league that are all kind of trying to, maybe they were loudly tanking before and now they're quietly tanking because of the slaps on the wrist. But to me, like, yes, it's going to be a loaded draft class, but you have no idea if your team's even going to get the lucky ping pong balls. And so how long that rebuild might take. I mean, look at the Jazz, look at the Wizards, how long it's taken them to maybe start to think that they can be competitive again. So I'm happy with where we are. I think this team still shows a lot of potential. And generally speaking, as I lead us into the next game, we have taken on and beaten all the teams that are beneath us in competitive competition. But we did slip up against the Bulls, which I think you were like more upset about in theory last week, if I remember right. You're like, they're all guards. They're playing all guards. And all of a sudden, the Bulls end up getting the win over the Suns 105-103. This was frustrating to see. No Josh Giddey. No, how do you say his name? Matas Buzelis. Thank you. Let's see. No Jalen Smith, former Sun great. No Jaden Ivey. No Patrick Williams. No Anthony Simmons, the great Boston Celtic himself. Yeah. Here's who they did have. Colin Sexton, and he had 30 points on 11 of 19 shooting. What is happening? Trey Jones chipped in 21 points. They played Isaac Okoro. Those three guys are 6'4 and under. They then played Yabusele, who I know a lot of the Suns fans wanted us to go grab. He played over 37 minutes. Nick Richards, former Sun great, 9 points and 11 rebounds in his revenge game. The Suns, yeah, we were down Mark Williams, but we had Devin Booker. I mean, we had a lot of the other key important pieces. Booker's 27, not enough to get the job done. I will say this, though. This is what I found to be really interesting in this game, and I mentioned it earlier. We went with a 10-man rotation. Fleming got over 11 minutes. Malawach got close to 12. Amir Coffey close to 18. Dunn over 23 minutes. Grayson Allen over 32 minutes off the bench. it looks to me like Ott is looking at this as opportunities to develop. Am I wrong? Yeah,
you are completely agreeing. Shout out to the You Know Ball podcast. They conned this month Mickey Mouse March, and that's what it basically is. In March, basically, like you were mentioning, Jake, teams are tanking at this point. Teams that are pushing for the playoffs, unless they're in like a actual really close playoff seeding, maybe some of the veterans aren't going as hard because they want to save their bodies for their playoffs. So you're going to see random games where, you know, maybe a random team like the Bulls can pull out a victory because a guy like Colin Sexton and Trey Jones can just go to the basket and score because the Suns have no interior pressure. In this game, that's kind of what the Suns did. They were experimenting, giving more
minutes. And I think that's a great reminder that front offices tank.
Mm-hmm.
The players don't.
Yes.
Colin Sexton's looking, he's like, I want to show that I deserve another big contract. I'll go play hard.
Mm-hmm. And he's been a guy that, like, let's not forget, Sexton got traded for Nurkic at the beginning of the year when he was traded from the Jazz to the Hornets, which a lot of people thought Sexton would have a lot more value than that. And then he got traded at the deadline once again from the Hornets for Kobe
White. I kind of felt bad. I don't know if I shared it in our group chat, but yeah, Colin Sexton got interviewed. Like, Hornets were on like a 5-6-7 game win streak and all of a sudden went from like terrible team to, oh, look, they look like they could make the playoffs this year and kind of be like a fun young team to watch. And he's like, yeah, you know, we're working hard. We're all locked in. And then, boom, traded Colin Sexton. And I'm like, oh, man, the guy that was kind of part of their quick turnaround. And they're like, no, we're not quite there yet.
Yeah, I thought I had him as like a six-man. He was my prediction for six-man of the year candidate. I really like Colin Sexton, but I thought he could have been really fun for that Hornets team. And like you mentioned, he was really good for that team. But unfortunately for him, just couldn't really fit there, trying to shine for the Bulls and did really good in this game. But the Bulls almost tried to throw this game away too. Like, I don't know if you saw it late. Like, the Bulls like made a terrible pass on purpose, like out of bounds, to like give the Suns the ball for them to like win the game. And then that's when Jalen Green smoked the layup. And then everyone went to Twitter and was like, wow, Jalen Green, 12 points, 5-for-20 for the field, 1-for-8 from 3-point range. What can this guy do? Nothing. Oh my God, he's so bad. And then they watch the next game and then they're like, maybe never mind. Maybe I shouldn't have tweeted about Jalen Green.
I mean, I don't know. It's, Let me tell the Planeteers real quick. So the games this week, starting with that Kings game, Jalen Green, you know, he's playing over 30 minutes a game in each of these games. But against the Kings, he ended up, as I mentioned before, 7 turnovers. He had 20 points. The game against the Bulls, 12 points. 1 turnover. But how about this? He went from shooting just under 44% against the Kings to shooting 25% against the Bulls. He did play better against the Pelicans, shooting 47%, but he and he got his 25 points. So, yeah, it was tale of two cities. It was tale of two different Jalen Greens. We need, you know, I think what happened is a lot of Suns fans saw that first game of Jalen Green just go off, and they're like, wow, Jalen Green's going to be amazing next to Devin Booker. And then, you know, he's been back for a couple of weeks and trying to fire everything back up again, and it's been uglier than pretty. I'll say that. I'm with you. It's going to be a process.
I think it's going to be. And that's the thing. He's also like, I think you know me, I try to give the benefit for everybody. I think for Jalen Green, the hardest part for him adjusting is the fact that their best POA defenders and Brooks and Goodwin are also not available, which makes him have to be more available on the defensive end and the offensive end. And for a player like Jalen Green, which we've seen from Houston, is he likes to be very isolated. And he had a quote yesterday when talking to, I believe, Hayden as well, where he said he sees the game more when he's in isolation, right? Like he can understand the game more. And from someone that's watched Jalen Green since high school, that's just what he's always kind of been. And I don't necessarily know if that's like a good thing. I'm not going to say it is, but I will say that there are moments when you are watching Jalen Green and you're for yesterday, for example, like he got they gave him a pass and he just like confidently took a three. And I was like, yeah, he just feels himself right now. Right. Mm-hmm. Like he's just going to go for that shot. And sometimes that's not good. But when it goes in, obviously it's going to be a different reaction. Right. Like, oh, yeah, it was a good shot. But he needs to limit some of those in my eyes. But I do think that once this team is fully healthy, he's going to have a little bit of a different role. And I think maybe working him more off the ball with Brooks and Booker being those elite initiators, or even Gillespie or Grayson Allen, will make him benefit a lot more, because I think that's going to show more strength to his game. And I think with so many injuries right now, he's forced to a little bit more of an on-ball role, which makes him a little bit worse. And then I also want to give some credit as well to Amir Coffey, because we talked about Coffey a little bit from these last couple of weeks when he got traded to the Suns. And we both mentioned how we kind of liked him as like a do-it-all kind of guy. And in the Bulls game, he had 12 points, 2 for 2 from three-point range, 4 rebounds. And even yesterday, I know he didn't really have like a big explosive offensive game comparative, right? But he's been very solid for this team, kind of doing the dirty work, doing all the little things. Yesterday, 0 points, but 2 rebounds, but a +4. Just, I remember yesterday's game, he got like a key offensive rebound, kicked it out to a three, and someone hit it. Like those little just like plays that don't come up on the stat sheet, or ones that fans aren't going to see in highlight reels, are still very important for Phoenix. And especially when Goodwin and Brooks, those kind of dirty work, do it all guys are out, I think it's nice to see Amir Coffey kind of step into that role. And like I said, everyone on this Suns team has kind of just had that next man up mentality this year, especially with Jordan Ott as this head coach. Mm-hmm. And I really like how they've institutionalized that into their identity as well this season.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're right. And speaking about one of those guys, and Michael P will love this one, Rashear Fleming, you know, has stepped up, I think, very well in limited minutes. I mean, he's getting important minutes. They're, you know, they're not just, hey, we're going to win this thing, or we're going to lose this thing, you know, at the end, wash minutes. But he's actually coming in and playing about 15 minutes a game, depending on the game. I'm curious, because I saw some of the Planeteers talking about it in the chat. Ryan Dunn did not have a great week this week. Let's see, against the Kings, 2 points, Bulls, 6 points. He did have 11 rebounds in that game. And then in the game against the Pelicans, which we'll talk about here in a bit, 3 points. Now, don't get me wrong, we don't look at Ryan Dunn as like, oh, okay, you got to light up the scoreboard here. But, yeah, 1 rebound against the Pelicans, 1 rebound against the Kings. No steals against the Kings, 2 steals against the Bulls, 1 against the Pelicans. He's playing – let's see, about 17. Okay, yeah, they gave him a pretty limited run, I guess, with the Pelicans. I guess that makes more sense. But, you know, 16 minutes against the Kings, over 23 against the Bulls, and about 12, 13 against the Pelicans. So let me ask it to you this way. You know, Dunn is our second year. You know, he's our sophomore first-round pick. We know what we expected him to be. It was, is a defensive first guy. You talked about point of attack defenders, Brooks and Goodwin. You didn't mention Dunn as one of those. And so talk a little bit about that. Talk a little bit about how you would handle Dunn. And if at some point, do you think, I mean, is this to kind of rebuild Dunn's confidence to keep giving him the opportunities, or at some point, do you just say, you know what, I think Fleming might actually already be better? Or am I just looking into just the recency bias of the last couple of weeks?
So I think for a majority of Suns fans, including myself, what we need to do is remember the Ryan Dunn from Summer League, where he was hitting all those threes and looked like he could be like a Mikal Bridges type guy. We need to forget that archetype, because that's not going to happen, I don't think. I just don't think the offense is going to come through for him. I see him, we talked about this a little bit when the Suns played the Celtics last week, but I see him kind of like that Jordan Walsh kind of build, maybe that Hugo Gonzalez type build, where he's just that like up gritty defender, kind of similar to like a Jordan Goodwin, where yes, you'd love to have the 3-point shot there, but it's just not going to be consistent all the time. And I feel like it's just going to be always part of his game to be a little bit streaky. Obviously, he has to be better on the defensive end. He did have 11 rebounds in the Bulls game, I believe, which was pretty good. But like you mentioned, 1 rebound in the other 2 games, not that great. He has ebbs and flows. Like I talked to John Voita about this when he did his article about Ryan Dunn needing to step up a couple weeks ago. Like Dunn had like an amazing game after that. And I was like, oh, did he read your article and stuff like that? So I think with him, it just comes in ebbs and flows. And that's a little bit harder, especially for a sophomore. I wouldn't say completely give up on him, But I do think the offensive game and like a polished offensive game for his type of archetype is just something we might not never see in the NBA. I think he might just be more of a defensive specialist with a streaky three-point shot. I would argue that a player in Rashear Fleming definitely has looked a little bit better just because he has been able to shoot the ball better. But coming out of college, that was kind of known. I felt like Rashear is kind of that Royce O'Neal, Haywood Highsmith kind of combination that the Suns kind of wanted to kind of have. And they have the two veterans that can do both of those things. But with Rashear kind of being a little bit younger, hopefully he can either merge into both of those types of players to be that ultimate 3-and-D wing combo that they can have, like a guy like Cam Johnson or a guy like Mikal Bridges that they used to have previously. Or they can, just hope that one of those random veterans can also be a good veteran leader for Rashear to continue to get better as well. I wouldn't completely rule out Ryan Dunn, but I definitely do think that Rashear needs more minutes because he has looked very impressive. And Stephen Prigione-Gardner from PHNX tweeted this out yesterday, so before the game with Rashear. Rashear in 370 minutes that are non-garbage has a 106 defensive rating and a plus 10 net rating with a 49.7 defensive field goal efficiency. So he's locking players down. He's really helping out the defense of this team, and he's bringing up the net rating on offense too. Definitely think he deserves some more runs. So to Nacho's point, I think that Fleming might be a little bit better and does deserve some of the time, but I will say that I don't think that the Dunn experiment needs to be completely given up.
It's he missed that one rebound.
The one rebound late at the game, dude. Like,
well, hey, the fact that Nacho's not going all Bradley Beal scorched earth on him tells me that, you know, even the King Nacho is has some degree of mercy, and we'll see. How about this for a stat? I'm not going to tell you which guy's which, but one guy is shooting 43% from the field, 32% mm-hmm. from three-point range, and 50% from the charity stripe. Yeah. The other guy is shooting 38.2% from the field, 31% from three, and 53% from the free throw line. Ryan Dunn and Rashear Fleming are almost the exact same offensive numbers so far into the season. I will say Fleming, though, to his credit, a lot of his early minutes were garbage time, yes. And it was probably just taking up junk shots. So I would prefer to see a little bit more of a let's give 18, 20 minutes to Fleming at this mm-hmm. point and see if a more consistent role, improves his efficiencies. And I think it could. I'm leaning that direction at this point. And we could kind of dial Dunn back to that 10 to 15 minute range mm-hmm. And kind of see where we go from there. But yeah, second season Ryan Dunn is definitely a hiccup. We'll put it that way. And so I'd like to see if Fleming can take that and run with it and have a good stretch, then I think it might, then it would be hard to consider Dunn super valuable moving forward if you find what you need in Fleming. And I agree with you. They have a little bit of a different prototype, different, body type to a degree as well. But those shooting splits were almost identical. It's kind of crazy to think that that's where they're at. but let's see here. Well, let's hit the boom room for a second. Let's go in there for a bit and see what shakes out.
What's the name of that nightclub of yours again?
Are you talking about the boom boom room?
Yeah, the boom boom room. That's it.
And I'll tell you what actually shook loose in the boom room, and that was three-point shots as the Suns set a franchise record 58 attempts against the New Orleans Pelicans, 28 attempts. Suns win by 2 points. live by the three, die by the three. Bruce, break it down. I saw an article on Brightside recently about the or maybe it was the stat that was linked to it. I'm not sure what I was seeing exactly. I think, Boyd was talking about the stat. We are straight up middle of the pack, 15th overall in three-point percentage. However, when we are shooting above that 15th position, I think it was above 34%, we win like 77% of our games. And when we shoot less than 34%, we lose. So, so what do you think about this new approach? Is it just getting up shots, or is this going to be part of the, are we just going to try and bomb away on teams in the playoffs? Is this kind of like the strategy?
I feel like this is just kind of the strategy. I feel like the Suns, with the NBA kind of going more three-point centric, just comparatively, the three is more valuable than the two. They're just going to take a lot more threes. I think Jordan Ott values the three a lot more, so that's going to be a big reason. But also, I think that they just try to take as many open shots, and a lot of the people on this team are generally good three-point shooters, like Colin Gillespie. Devin Booker has been better as of recently since the beginning of the season after, you know, we may have cursed him by talking about how good of a three-point shooter he was. We won't bring that back up. But, you know, Royce O'Neal can hit the three pretty well. Rashear Fleming, now that he's getting the offense, can. Grayson Allen can. Even Amir Coffey can. So I do think that it just kind of tailors to the play style of the players on the roster as well, right? Like, I think that we've seen, especially with Mark Williams, in games where, like, versus the Nets, where they are weak interior, the Suns will kind of play into that focus too. So I think they can kind of play into both, but they are just strong suitedly constructed to be better as a three-point shooting team. But, it was a great game. Devin Booker had 25 points in the second half, 18 in the third quarter, 32 overall in the game.
He does love putting on a show for his pals.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, it was versus the Pelicans, as, you know, one of his teams that he always cooks up against at home, and that was really nice to see. Colin Gillespie.
It's like Detroit, New Orleans, and like the New York Knicks. Like, he loves playing the Garden because it's the Garden, but then he loves connection to the Mississippi, like the Bayou, the Gulf, and also to Detroit and Michigan.
Yep, he's just got those connections, like you said, and I think maybe there's
connected to like Oklahoma.
Connected to Oklahoma and San Antonio. Come on, Devin. Come on.
Get some familiar ties, man. It's interesting. Let me ask you real quick. Do you have stats pulled up right now?
Yeah. Team? Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, don't look at them because I'm gonna test your mind a little bit. 3-point shooting. I'm gonna remove Mark Williams because he knocks down everyone he takes. I think he's made one. But he's hit them all. Kobe Brea has hit 57% from threes of the five games he's been in. But without looking, who is currently the leading three-point shot maker percentage-wise?
Is it someone that actually plays?
Yes. Yeah. Like, I removed, like, yeah, like the, oh, in five games he hit two of three.
I'm going to go Grayson. I don't know why.
Grayson. Okay. All right. Grayson, if you remove those two guys I mentioned, two, three, four, he would be fifth on the list.
Colin
Gillespie hitting 42.3%. I forget how good he was in like that December, January, like where we were like, wait, who is this guy? And then he'd knock one down, and then he'd steal the ball, and then he'd knock another one down. I'm like, why is he still shooting? But he kept making them. So there's a reason. And he still is shooting it pretty well. Royce O'Neal was, I think we talked about this last week, he was just over 40%. Looks like the latest numbers have him just under 40% now. But he would have been second on that list. And then Amir Coffey is now at 37.5. This is, I believe, just the Suns games being counted. And then, believe it or not, above Grayson Allen and just below Amir Coffey, Jordan Goodwin. 35.6% from three-point range, which is, I feel like, much better. Maybe it's just a feeling check, but I remember him taking threes and not making threes his first stint in Phoenix. And you're like, ooh, a guard that can't hit threes. Good thing he played defense and tried to rebound. But now he's Yeah, he is what we always wanted Josh Okogie to be. And that was actually somebody that could scare people by knocking down shots. And so he good one. We need I did not think we would say this coming into the season where it was between what Butler and Goodwin to make that last spot, but we need Goodwin back. We need Goody back. He's a key member of this team. So yeah, unfortunately some of the guys that you might have thought or guys that you want to be much better. Devin Booker, 31.7%. We talked about Dunn, just under 32. Dylan Brooks, 34% from three-point range. How about
don't even ask.
That actually plays.
Who's the worst that actually plays?
Yeah.
Oso.
He doesn't even register.
Because he's at zero because he hasn't attempted.
Yeah, that's yeah. Okay.
That's what I know.
Yeah. No, so not including Oso. Guys that actually, good caveat. Guys that actually play and actually take threes, not named Nigel Hayes-Davis.
I was going to say, is it who I think it is? Do I have to say the name?
You do.
It's Jalen Green, right?
Jalen Green, 26.9% mm-hmm. from three-point range at this time. So, We need the green man. He was never great at the three. I will point that out. But we do need him to get to 30-plus. That would be important. But touching on this Pelicans game a little bit more, the Pelicans went on a run, especially in that fourth quarter where they outscored us 35-26. Like I said, the Suns did end up getting that two-point win. And as you mentioned, Devin Booker loves himself a little bit of Pelican with that 32 points. The Pelicans, though, you know, for a team that's, they're not tanking because there's no incentive to tank. They're just bad. They sent away their first round draft pick, those fools, to Atlanta so that they could acquire Derek Queen, who they played 12 minutes and 57 seconds. Interesting about this team is they had been playing DeAndre Jordan over him. I'm always impressed that DeAndre Jordan, is still in the league.
And yeah, that he gets to
start some nights is impressive. Queen was not a factor in this game. But, you know, they still have these guys that I feel like a lot of teams would want. And when I tell you the starting lineup, DeJounte Murray had 15 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists. Troy Murphy, 22 points. Zion Williamson, 19 points, 10 rebounds. Sadiq Bey, 19 points, 6 rebounds. And Herb Jones, their 3-and-D defender, you know, key wing defender, 14 points, 4 assists. Like, I would say that's a good starting lineup, or at least a good collection of 5 players, quality players, as compared to, like, what we were talking about earlier with the Kings being like, all right, yeah, they have DeRozan and Russell Westbrook out there, but those two guys are like a shell of their former great selves, and then 3 other guys that you don't know. Or like the Bulls that are like, all right, we're going to play, you know, 4 guys that are 6'8" and under. And by under, I mean mostly under 6'4". I don't know. Pelicans are a mess. I kind of feel like a franchise.
Yeah, they're exactly what you said. And I was on a podcast earlier this week. Shout out to my friends, Eamon Castles and Eli Deglawi. But I called the Pelicans and the Kings poverty in the NBA, and I compared them to being sent to the gulag because we were talking about prospects, NBA draft prospects, and I was praying that the Sacramento Kings do not get the number 1 overall pick because they will just have if I have to watch Massachusetts native AJ DeBonsta get drafted to the Sacramento Kings and have his career ruined in 3 years because the Sacramento Kings don't know how to build around him, I'm personally going to freaking cry, okay?
I mean, that's exactly how the draft is supposed to work, though, right?
I have to watch Cooper Flagg already be on the Dallas Mavericks and hate his life and want to go to Boston and just play with Jason Tatum already. I can't have to deal with that with AJ DeBonsta. But, yeah, the Pelicans, like you mentioned, I like some of their players, like DeJounte Murray, Trey Murphy, Herb Jones, even Sadiq Bey and Zion Williamson. It's just not a conglomerative that's going to win basketball games. This is a team of 5 or besides Herb Jones, who, you know, you can give the ball and say, go hoop. All four of these guys in the starting lineup are just going to, yeah, go hoop. Here's the ball, Zion. Go try and score. Here at Trey Murphy, go chuck up 17 shots and try to make and 10 threes and make 50% of them, right? DeJounte Murray, you can have the whole fourth quarter to yourself where you can try to get hot to will this game back in, right? Like, they need, like, they don't have an identity or an infrastructure like the Suns do, where it's like, oh, we're going to value on defense. And that's just for, like, you know, they're in a rebuild. They're trying to figure things out. I mean, they should be a little bit better. They just confuse me. I think top to bottom, they're just kind of cursed, honestly. Small market doesn't help them either, with, like, no motivation or drive to really be anything, which just makes it difficult. They almost did win this game too. Zion did get a steal late.
What almost made it a bad week.
Yeah, exactly. The Suns almost did lose one
instead of 2-1, and being like, ah, we had a hiccup against the Bulls. If it would have been, we beat the Kings, lost to the Bulls, lost to the Pelicans, I'd be like, what is happening here? Jalen Green knocked down a 3-point shot.
Exactly. And Green played pretty well. Like, a lot of people still gonna glamour over the 3-for-9 3-point shooting and the 8-for-7 from the field goal range, but he had 25 points. He was getting active. I believe he had his most free throw attempts in this game with 7 in the season, which just goes to show you he's being more aggressive, attacking the lane and trying to do that. I know that a lot of people over the last couple of days maybe have been not really fond of him missing a lot of layup attempts or attempts at the cup, but I think it's just going to come with time with Jalen Green. Again, like, is he the perfect fit? No. Did we all know this kind of coming into this season? Yes. But I think that ultimately for the Suns, he hasn't been this disastrous curse where he looks like a non-tradable contract, to where the Suns are going to be forced to be in a predicament where they have to sign and waive him like Bradley Beal, which is the only benefit that I see with this, because they have to do another, right? Sign or whatever the hell they have to do to get off a contract. And they have to add more money onto the Bradley Beal dead money and to the, what's his name? Freaking, who?
EJ Little?
Yep. EJ Liddell and who was the other one? Nazir Little. Thank you.
Nazir Little. Yeah. Little and Liddell.
Little and Liddell. Adding to that, more dead money.
With the Beal deal, we are what? Spending $22 million each year for like the next two, and then Liddell comes off, which is like $750,000. And then we continue with the Beal and Little until like 2030. 2031, I think. Yeah, it's that's why we're still, as fun as this season has been, we are going to be walking a bit of a tightrope.
And they'll be back, I think, next year. There was a model that came out from a reporter from CBS a couple months ago, where you could input a player and you could see their contract if you like adjusted their minutes and like how much they played and stuff like that. It unfortunately has been like buggy, because I think the person that made it has to like input everything logistically. So it kind of got, and I think it got over trafficked. So it got shut down a little bit, because I've tried to go back to it and use it, and it hasn't really worked either, both on my laptop, on my phone. But when it did come out, they said Colin was worth around like 15 to 20. And then I think Mark was around 10 to 12. So like when you,
I figured both would be close about to 15.
And I think Mark is probably in that 15 range, just because I think they'll eventually bump it, just because he's an RFA. They want to make sure that he doesn't get stolen, so they'll give him like 14 or 15 for like 3 years. Colin,
although I don't know, who knows, with expansion draft, you might just be like, oh, can I interest you in a Mark Williams?
That's true. And then I know that for Colin Gillespie, a lot of the talks were he'd get something around a Ty Jerome kind of contract, is what people were saying. So like a 3-year, $9 million, $10 million. The Suns luckily do have the early bird rights on Colin Gillespie, because the fact that he was an RFA with the team, and then they converted him this year, or signed him this year, which means that basically if any team tries to get Colin, the Suns can obviously get him, and they have his early bird, right? So they can offer a contract before any team basically does. So the Suns, I think, with the Colin situation, will be a little bit easier in free agency. But talking about the money and stuff like that, I do think the Suns will be over the luxury tax next year, and maybe even in one of the aprons again going into next year. This year they did duck the luxury tax. Maybe once again next year they try to duck the luxury tax too to once again end the repeaters so they can unfreeze their pick. But I could also see them maybe going back just because they kind of have to, and then maybe in the middle of the season they make maybe move a Royce or a Grayson to lower that bill a little bit. I don't know.
Well, I know what King Nacho's answer is going to be. I'm pretty sure I know what your answer is going to be. I don't know what my answer would be right away to this question, but I talked about it coming into this season. And that was, I would rather eat the Bradley Beal money over 2 years than and just pay the man out and have him try and play. Now, granted, he played like, what, 6 games for the Clippers, then became out for the year. So that would be, if we did do that, again, like King Nacho would be losing his mind right now on this podcast with Bradley Beal. So I totally get that. But he would then be on the team next year with his player option, you know, possibly try and trade him off to see if somebody wants to take on that huge contract to just clear their books or something like that, or you just let it go. I see the no's already in the chat. I'm just saying, I think, okay, so correct. Walk me through it. One of the reasons why it's good that we did not try and do that is we were able to make sure the pick doesn't get frozen because we didn't have so much money locked up in there. And it also gave us the maneuverability to, yeah, make some trades at the trade deadline and get us under some of the kind of those threshold choke points. Is that right?
Yeah, so with the Bradley Beal situation, we were in the second apron. By waiving him, we dropped underneath both aprons. We still had him on the roster. We would have been in the apron, so we would have had – it would have been like – we wouldn't have – I don't think – no, we would have been able to do the Nigel Hayes-Davis and Nick Richards trade still because we took less back, but it's still –
we probably would have had a, like, offload –
yeah,
it would Royce have been O'Neal and Grayson to try and get under those.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
We'd have to take next to nothing back. Yeah.
You'd be taking like seconds for those players or right. A late first just to get off the contract. And they would be going to like a team like, you know, like, I don't know, like a Rockets or something to like help them in their playoff push, which I'd rather the Suns. The Bradley Beal saga, I think, would have just gotten worse over time. I feel like this year, especially if he only played 5 games this season. Imagine the Suns had him. He came out and played 5 games. I don't even.
Yeah, no. King Nacho would be. He'd say, "We only want Kevin and Bruce doing this show from now on."
I haven't been to Phoenix, so I can't attest. But all I heard was the bobbleheads on Bradley Beal night was not a good experience, and I just can't imagine how things would have continued to go if he was still on the roster. I think it was best for both parties to move off. And for Brad to be, unfortunately, I mean, he got hurt this year, couldn't really play. I don't really know what's in store for him. Maybe he'll – I know he was on a 2-year deal, so he could always go back to the Clippers. But with the Clippers kind of pivoting directions with Darius Garland and Benedict Mathurin
and now. Did you see that latest story about the whistleblowers, like, from that, like, phony shell company and – saying no. That, oh yeah, the Clippers were paying him. Yeah, the Athletic had, I think they revealed the source was like somebody that supposedly was with that group that was helping pay Leonard millions under the table to not do anything for them. So that'll be very, very interesting. Yeah, and I'm guessing, well, you know, Bradley Beal likes to be in a losing franchise. So
it is true. Maybe
he has a lot of experience just sitting there. I'll put the ball in the bucket and enjoy our time. And you know, I just loved his spirit. He's like, you know, every year I think we're going to be the best. And it's like, you should not feel that way all the time. There's a lot of that. I see we had a Spurs guy here in the chat. Yeah. So, I'll just say thanks for coming by. Thanks for boosting our numbers. You're always welcome. Robert Horry stole the title from us. And
I have to give the Spurs.
It's like a 12-year-old's 2K creation. And congratulations. And if he said something like the NBA lottery's rigged. Yeah. I mean, for the Spurs, you guys tank and then you go get yourself a Tim Duncan to put with Duncan Robinson. Then you tank again, you go get Wemby. So it's certainly in one direction. It's not in the poor Sacramento Kings direction. before we close up. The villain getting pulled over by the cops. Just Blaze. Dylan Brooks getting pulled over. Told that he's been swerving multiple lanes. There's jokes in that bit. Swerving multiple lanes and body cam footage. I haven't seen all of it yet, but it was basically, are you under the influence? It smells like weed in here. I haven't been smoking, officer. Okay, let's do a breathalyzer. What did I blow? Zeros. I'm still taking you in for suspicion. And then they let him go. And to my knowledge, they have not actually pressed charges. They just booked him and ended up not pressing charges. So Dylan Brooks, the villain of the local police Metro Police Department. What are your thoughts on this? Because we've had a lot of people letting him know that he's a rich, multimillionaire. He needs to stay off the streets if he's going to imbibe. But if he didn't imbibe, is he fine? I don't know. Like, what was he doing late at night not imbibing? Is kind of what I like. Was he at his buddy's house playing video games till 1 a.m? There's a lot of questions. But Bruce, go off, young man.
All I'm going to say is if Dylan Brooks is
everyone come to Boston and puff, puff, give.
Well, yes, but I mean, he has a broken wrist, right? And maybe he needs some ailments, right? Maybe his wrist is acting.
That's a fair point, a little painkiller.
Right? Like, yeah. Maybe he's like, I need a little bit of relaxation,
do
right?
Do not operate heavy machinery.
Yeah, do not.
When taking painkillers.
Yes, but maybe he needed some, and it was late at night, right? It was like 1, 2 in the morning. Maybe he couldn't sleep. Maybe he then got the munchies and was like, you know what? Kind of fiending for some food. And from what I saw on social media, Scott Skills got some nice late open spots till 1, 2 in the morning.
They do have some amazing food for sure.
At late night. So, I mean, Dylan Brooks probably just doing his normal routine like he'd be doing in Houston, right? Like going out late, like to some strip clubs or some parties. He's just trying to translate that over to Phoenix as well, trying to just relax. Probably got a little too carried away maybe, and then was a little bit hungry, decided to go on the road, get some food, not really thinking about it. And then, yeah, this police officer pulls him over. I mean, the fact that he blew zeros and still arrested him is just outright hilarious.
That's usually...
The other funny part, I know you said you didn't see really the body cam, the videos. I saw like one like video, and he was like, what happened to your wrist? Like, are we not watching the games, buddy? We live in Scottsdale. I'm in Massachusetts and I'm watching the games. How are you not watching the games? Like, you don't know. You pull over a dude that's 6'6" and he has a broken wrist and he looks pretty famous. I wonder who this is. I don't know. Why do you have a like, it's just kind of dumb. Dylan was also like making fun of him on how he was driving, which was kind of funny in the clip, because in the back of the car, the cop was like apparently driving bad. He's like, I'm just doing what you're doing. What do you mean I'm driving bad?
Yeah, you're swerving in lanes. Like, dude, you know what it was? As I think he was getting as like he was probably you're going in and out of lanes, not using turn signals.
What everyone in Massachusetts does. Trust Brooks. Me, I DoorDash every day. I see it all the time. People are always driving around with no turn signals. Don't even go to New Jersey if you want to be that officer. You'll see it every on the highway all day. People with tinted windows just flying by and freaking no blinker. And it's the most annoying thing. I feel like that's just a commonality with people in driving. So like, I don't really know. I think
Massachusetts.
Yes, especially Massachusetts.
I've seen the driving there.
Yeah, the people don't know how to drive here. But it's terrible. I feel bad for Brooks himself, because a lot of people as well like just went to social media with really no understanding of what the situation was and kind of blasted him. That's why I didn't want to speak on anything. I'm very glad that Gambo kind of came out with the full definitive kind of breakdown for everything, for everyone to understand. Obviously, driving drunk and driving high are still both bad, but clearly I think that one of them outright does the other, especially when you are injured. And I think that some people kind of hyperbolize the story, especially when he was blowing zeros. I think it's just absolutely insanity. But for me personally, I know that this has happened to many other Phoenix stars while they've been in Phoenix. Most famously, maybe Josh Jackson, maybe not while his time in Phoenix, but after his time in Phoenix too, right? But yeah. For Boston sports, this doesn't really happen. So for me to see this be like a big headline was very shocking to me, because I didn't think you would get this blown out of proportion. And that might just be me personally, but like, I saw it as like, oh yeah, it happened, but like, whatever, like, you know what I mean? Like,
well, and I feel like it was handled as best as it possibly could have been by Brooks.
Yeah,
he didn't like jump out and be like, do you know who I am? Dylan Brooks, I'm the villain. Do you not?
Yeah, like the, like all the NFL like, players that get pulled over for speeding, and they're like, yeah, you know who I
exactly.
am?
Like, he seemed very like more that. Like he seemed like a tired guy at like late in the morning. He's like, come on, man, like I'm not doing anything wrong here. And so yeah, he maybe went out and got some munchies or something like that. Was this after the Bulls game?
It must be, because
he was a little pissed off. Yeah,
I was like, gonna say maybe he went after the Bulls, they lose, him and the team go out, or maybe he doesn't go out with the team, maybe he just goes out for himself, has his little puffing, has just trying to relax, de-stress after sitting on the bench and not being able to help a Suns team lose to a Bulls team that's throwing the game away. Like, he's a little frustrated. We all know that even though he's a nice guy off the court, like impactfully in the game, he's always clocked in. So maybe he was a little frustrated with that. They wanted to de-stress a little bit. And then, you know, Scottsdale PD said, not tonight. You can't have a celebratory game, a celebratory finish.
Use that, those oils. Just rub the oils over.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or
calm
down.
Maybe
just wear some sunglasses or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Especially
that late at night. Yeah.
Yeah.
They won't be like, what are y'all doing, sir? Just listening to Synthwave and thinking about the 80s? No. just cruising, officer. Just wanted us to chase the sunset.
Also, side note, it's legal in Arizona, correct? Like, I'm not mistaken by that.
At least,
so, like,
yeah, at least medicinally.
Medicinally, yeah. I don't know about recreationally, least, yeah. but medicinally, yeah. At least. So, like, these officers should understand, right? Like, they definitely see.
You know, the fact of the matter is
driving only, around.
Yeah,
like,
it was just one officer. Who knows? It could have been like a 22-year-old kid that recently just joined the force. We don't know him either. And the fact that they got him there, they put him, they took a picture of him, then they let him go and said he's done. We're like,
TMZ was all over.
The kid probably brought him back in, and then the other officers were like, "What are you doing?"
There was no reason
to have him here.
They're saying in the chat that it's recreational too. So, like, okay. that explains
Bradley Beal's behavior. No,
like, as someone that grows up in the Northeast, where everywhere it's legalized. I know Midwest, it's a little bit different compared to
medicine. It's only medicine. Because
when I went to Minnesota, it was just recreational legalized like a couple months before I had went.
Right.
Like, so like, I know it's like different over there compared to where I am, but over there it's also recreationalized. So like, they see people operating motion vehicles high all the time, probably higher on worse stuff. Like, I don't understand it. It's kind of silly, like you mentioned. And TMZ, I think, obviously always over broadcast things, but I was watching the Suns game last night towards the end, and Seton Hall was in a close one, so I decided to put that on. And when the Seton Hall game ended, it was on FS1. It went straight to like TMZ Sports, and shit you not, they were talking about the Dylan Brooks thing for like 5 minutes. And I was like, what are we doing? Like,
way
I just
to go, Dylan
off.
Brooks.
Yeah,
you are officially a star. good for you, DB.
They talked about him engaging in foul baiting and driving high. That's their two big storylines for Dylan. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
They must love it anytime James Harden's in town.
my friend Josh, I should ask this too. I don't think he's going to get suspended either.
I don't think either. You know, again, if there was no charges, and from what's being revealed so far in the camera footage and from the sources to Gambo, it sounds like it was precautionary, is what the officer is going to say. That he thought he smelled some stuff, and you know, again, maybe his buddies were, you know, in the car with him prior, and they were, and most of it was out of his system by the time he got
gone.
We don't know the full context, but I think without charges, it would be very difficult to do anything. And I don't think they should do any type of like, oh, well, you got pulled over for suspicions of doing stuff. I mean, that wouldn't be fair to a player, especially a player that clearly wants to be out there with this team. It's not like his reputation. He's not a Josh Jackson, which I still remember just like imagining trying to be like a Suns fan in the Valley and be like, yeah, yeah, we went to the local grocery store to meet the new Suns star, Josh Jackson. He never showed up. So all of a sudden, James Jones walks in and buys everyone beer. And then they find out later that Josh Jackson's down the road at somebody else's birthday party instead of at the planned event. Jackson's behavior was is not nearly on the same level as Dylan Brooks. But anyway, we had a very good show today. I appreciate you hanging in there with us. We went a little long, but we had some interesting things to touch on. I wanted to get a little bit more introspective with where I think this team can go. Let's talk real quick. We've got a 4-game slate. I'm loving it. And it's going to be interesting. I will say there's competition at the end. How about that? Depending on your view. Well, Giannis is back, so
yep.
maybe the Bucks will be a threat. So it's a 4-game slate. First one in Phoenix against the Charlotte Hornets. It's a team that's young, on the rise. I mean, they got some cool players. Milwaukee Bucks is in Milwaukee on Tuesday. Following that, we go to Indiana. We have a 6-game road trip coming up. We're going to hit 3 this week. So in Indiana against the Pacers, that should be an easy win. And then we take on the Toronto Raptors in Toronto. And so that'll be the challenge for sure. And so Hornets, Bucks, Pacers, Raptors. It's not going to be as easy as we went 2-1. It's not going to be as easy as it was this week. So what do you got for us, Bruce?
I'm going to go 2-2. I think the easiest game that I look at and think that we can win is the Pacers game, just because they are kind of tanking at this point. Pascal Siakam has gotten some DMPs. He has been playing recently, but it's been happening. And the Pacers are just kind of like a young team. They do match a lot of the Suns' energy and play style, so maybe it could be a little bit close. But I think that the Pacers will be trying to lose that game and the Suns will win that one. I also think that one of the Bucks or Raptors games they will win. I do think, like you mentioned, Giannis coming back is going to be very tough for the Suns, just because, as we've seen with the Bulls and the Pelicans, they can outscore us in the paint. So what's Giannis going to do? I'm a little scared with that. Similar with the Raptors, they're kind of wing size. They can match the Suns a little bit. And then the Hornets, like you mentioned, Jake, a very fun, interesting team. Our famous trade partners, Mark Williams, will unfortunately not be going.
We love a good Hornets center.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, Mark Williams will not be getting to go up against his Hornets team, but Hornets just snapped a 6-game winning streak, I believe. They just lost the other night, so they'll be looking to get revenge in Phoenix. So very good offensive team. I don't know. I don't have like a prediction for the games like individually. I just know we'll probably go 2-2. I think that all of these will be close. I think they'll be very fun. And like you mentioned, Suns got a 6-game road trip coming up after this Hornets game tomorrow. So definitely going to be interesting to see how they work on the road with these upcoming games, because in the standings wise, they are 7th, only 2 games back from the Lakers and 3.5 above the Warriors and Clippers. So kind of settling themselves truly as that 7, but by the end of this 6-game road trip, we could see them maybe being closer to a 6 or a 5, or we could see them being closer to maybe an 8 or a 9, which I think is very telling for the last kind of 2 to 3 weeks for this team.
Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see could Goodwin be back this week?
I think he could.
While you take a look at that, I'm going to say 3-1. I think you're more likely right with the 2-2, but I think a 3-1 is definitely possible. I think we take care of business against the Hornets. They did have a win streak, but mostly against weaker opponents. Well, if you throw in the Celtics, so they had a quality win there, and we couldn't do that. I think, though, we can take care of business against the Hornets. I think even with Giannis back, I would still say that the Bucks team is just not what it once was. The Pacers game is the Pacers game. We definitely need to come out with a win against that team. And then, the Raptors have been a tough team. You know, it's tough because I feel like it could be the Raptors, could be the Hornets, or it could be the Bucks. But I think the Raptors get the win over us this week. And you know, it might be a little bit of, 6-game road trip traveling around the country. And I think that's actually on a back-to-back, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, we are in Indianapolis and then for a 6 o'clock game, and then we fly out to Toronto to play the very next night. So I think that that's going to be the game that's going from, okay, we just took care of an easy team, but we're on the road. We're a little stressed from the road. We're a West Coast team. We're out in the East Coast. And now we got to travel up to Toronto for the very next night. So that'll be my prediction, 3-1. Did you find some good win news?
Yes, I did. So shout out John Gambadoro, as always. He said, in reference to someone asking about Goodwin, that he was probably a week behind Book. Book came back on Tuesday. So
maybe join us for the road trip after the
Hornets. Maybe join us for the road trip. Maybe he comes back for the Bucks game. I would expect him to be back for the Pacers and Raptors, most definitely, but most likely out for the Hornets, maybe back for the Bucks. But we should at least see him in at least, you know, half of these games on this road trip, which will be very interesting and very needful for this team, especially without Dylan Brooks still for a couple more weeks.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know we got a jet, so you can follow me at Fallen Founder. I am not actually Dylan Brooks's attorney, but I will represent the man if he needs it. And Bruce, read your resume.
Yep. We got Twitter here, which has been doing pretty decent. Shout out to John for reposting some of my stuff. I actually got some good interactions over the last 24 hours. So really appreciative of that. You can follow me on Twitter at Bruce Willis to see everything talking about the Suns, some Celtics stuff, and NBA news as well. You can also check out my work at YouTube, where I do YouTube videos for Swish City, where I talk about the NBA. And I write for Bright Side of the Sun as a staff writer, which I had some articles come out this week, talked about the Suns center room, which we discussed in this pod. Also talked about Royce O'Neal and Grayson Allen surprising me this year and proving me wrong, which was one of my takes that I'm willing to step back and talk about as a writer, which I think is very important in this media sphere. And also I have an article coming out about the Suns community and how impactful it is. So that will be something to keep an eye on. And then also I recently just got a contributing job as well with FanSided, working for the Indiana Pacers site, 8 Points 9 Seconds. So you will see me very, very bought into this Pacers Suns game this week because I'll be covering it for two sites. So
go Pacers.
Yeah, go Pacers. I'm joining Jake out in the Midwest. I'm going to be having us to watch multiple games, but yeah, doing that there as well. So make sure to stay tuned with everything. But if you just want the Sun stuff, Bright Side of the Sun, definitely one of the best spots to get Suns news. So definitely check it out.
Well, congratulations on the new gig, the Celtics Suns fan covering Pacers games.
Yep.
Can't wait to read that opinion. Like, because I was wondering why you're going in depth on that. You know, the Pacers have some young players. They play with a lot of energy. I'm like, oh my God, now it all makes sense. Somebody's getting ready for the new role. Well, thanks everybody for joining us. Sorry it was a little bit late, but like I said, we touched on a few different topics. Hope you enjoyed it. We will see you next week. Hopefully Kevin will be here with us. Mm-hmm. Al McCoy, take it away.
Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, stay with us as the Suns get set to shine here on their home court.
Here's Perry, the guard Hurd. Here's the jump shot. Good! It's good!
Al McCoy with you courtside. Pumped up a three.
Tuesday! He ties it. A.D.A. Allen, Tim, up here.
Oh, happy birthday! Yeah! I know it's from all the happy birthday, baby!
Here's Cameron Payne out on top. Durant, three-pointer straight away.
Tuesday!
I just want to take this opportunity to thank everyone in this arena this afternoon, to all of those that are watching and listening on radio and TV. A thank you for allowing me to tell the story of the Suns for 51 great years.
That pretty much wraps things up here. And for one last time, this is Al McCoy saying thanks for being there. Thanks for being with us tonight. And from the Footprint Center here in downtown Phoenix, we'll just say so long for now.